Hello and welcome to this special episode, the Succession Recaps on ATN Betches. I'm Sammy.
And I'm Aileen, and I am so excited to be here, Sammy.
I know.
If it is to be said, so it is.
Are you all right?
So Succession hasn't started yet, the new season. We are going to be recapping every episode, every Monday in these bonus episodes. Our usual episodes are Thursday, as you know, for all you At Betches fans, but ATN Betches is coming Monday. So just to prime all of us for this new season and final season, which is, can't believe they dropped that on us. We're going to recap basically the last episode, the finale of the last season, the third season, and also just generally talk about last season, what we think this season has for us in store. First, before we should tell all the listeners, why us? Why are we even doing this? Sammy, you go first.
I mean, this is like our sweet spot. We are right in between like an amazing HBO show about rich people behaving badly, our favorite type of show in general. And, you know, as business people ourselves, I would like to think that we have, you know, a pretty good understanding of the market. You know, I think that this is just like our safe space. Like if you had to tell me, if you had to like put together something for us to podcast about, this is it.
There's nothing better.
I've been watching Succession all weekend.
I just want to also say that I planted my stake in the ground season one when the show came out, and I said, this is the best show on television. It is such a good show. I'm obsessed with it. I've watched every season maybe four times, and I just love it so much. I love the dialogue. It's just everything. You know what I love about the show? And we're going to get into this first, but this is what I love about the show. That there's so much subtext in every conversation, and there's always things for you to like figure out that happens behind the scenes. Like it's not like every scene is jam-packed with like information and things and clues and what's happening, like for you to understand what's going on in the plot, because the conversations aren't so straightforward. So, and that's what makes it fun and funny and entertaining to watch. But like for you to be like steps ahead and like to figure out who is doing what, you have to like kind of extrapolate data and information from what you're watching. And that's what I love about it, is that it's not so obvious. It's while a lot of their dialogue is like so absurd and crazy and on the nose, like it's actually kind of subtle and plot wise. And I just love it. It's just so fucking brilliant.
I mean, even as I was rewatching it, I was catching lines that I didn't catch the first time. I was like, this is so fucking, I was actually cracking up aloud at some of the things that I had not even noticed the first few viewings I had done. But the other thing that I did this time around was, as you're saying, I think in the past I hadn't paid as much attention to the like business nuances. Mm-hmm. You know, I would sort of like zone out on that. Sound familiar? But I would pay attention to like the relationships. But this time I was watching it for the business nuances, and I actually feel that that's where all the clues of what will happen are hidden. Because one might perceive that it's a question of screwing each other over as people. But in reality, it's all sort of just based on like the shares of the business that they're plotting based on. Not really like anything relational. They don't care about each other.
No. It's also based in history. It's based in like the Murdochs. The first season is very copy and paste to what actually happened. And there is the Murdoch documentary out. Where is that, on HBO? Rupert like has a heart attack on a boat, not in a helicopter, and like they all go to a hospital. It's basically a lot of the same thing happens,
and his sons are arguing too over,
I'm sure all of this is going to keep coming up, and our love for the show is just going to just be, I don't want to say the word squirting, but it's coming out through the pore, through our pores. But I feel like we should get into the episode. It's oozing. It's not squirting. I have a loss for words. I just am excited. So going into the show, our show, we're going to have all these great segments. And the first segment is our shareholder earnings report, which is how we rate this episode.
So every week during the final season, we are going to start with our rating of the episode. It is going to be our personal rating from 1 to 5 way stars for what we thought the episode earned. What would you have given the finale of season 3?
I give this a 5. This was jam-packed. This every single scene, I almost could not choose my favorite scene when I was going through, and like I couldn't figure out my favorite moment. I mean, I did eventually after a lot of deliberation, but there was just so much good juicy dialogue and like some really funny, some just like so witty, and just some just like dark and like you're trying to figure out whose side you're on, and then you realize who's right. Like I just love this fucking episode, and it was also so good in the moment. It wasn't one of those two where like the penultimate episode was better than the finale, and the finale just kind of closed, just tied the knots. Like this one was like so much more fucking dramatic than the one before. So I give it a 5. It went out with a bang. What do you think?
I have to give it a 5 as well. Not to just be full of praise for Waystar Royko.
It was just a good episode.
Our first episode, but it really was so good. Now, do you want to recap the whole episode and we can talk about what happened? Yes. So everyone will get used to how we're going to be doing these episodes, and then we'll move on to our next segment.
Okay. So first thing that happens in this episode is you open up with Logan reading to Kendall's son, because at this point, we, the audience, are left with a cliffhanger where we think that Kendall has like killed himself on the floaty. Like
accidentally
or whatever, has drank himself to death after that like crazy conversation he has with his dad, and where he's like willing to have his son kind of test like the poisoned mozzarella, just all of that. And so you see that floating scene, and I remember like everybody talking about it, like, oh my God, is he dead?
Is he alive?
Kendall? Well, he's alive, and he just—they're all playing like Monopoly. The kids are sitting under like a palapa, an Italian palapa, and Kendall's alive. And it's funny because Comfrey comes out, and one of the great lines was like, "They kept him overnight. I don't know why. I don't speak Italian, but no media pickup, so all good." And he's fine, and he comes out starting to talk about how he's discussing putting all his communications on the last 5 years on Insta, and you know, he's still doing the Kendall thing. But this is all basically a setup. They all fake that they care. Although I truly believe, and I wrote this down as a note for later, our later conversation, but I really believe that Roman cares. No one else really does, but Roman cares about Kendall the most. And you could feel it, especially in this scene when they're like,
"You don't think Connor cares?"
No. Connor's just,
I think Connor cares about all of them. Because if you remember, there's a scene that comes like a little bit later where the four of them are all having lunch or
the
something.
The sibling lunch.
And then Kendall's like, "I'm so upset because I was the firstborn. This was supposed to be me." And Connor's like, "I'm the firstborn son. I am our father's firstborn son." And he actually expresses that he's frustrated because none of them care about him, and he feels like he cared about them. He wanted a relationship, and none of them really cared about him at all, which is, I think, kind of true. Like Connor's like a dick, but he does, I think, want a relationship with his siblings.
I think so too, but he's also just like very, very far removed from like the world, like life. Like he's just, he wants to marry an escort that he's hired. He's running for president. I don't rate Connor as like a person. Yeah. Like he's not
but
a serious person.
But that doesn't mean
he can't. No, I don't. But between the like close siblings, I really believe that Roman is the only one who like really loves Kendall and like cares about him.
You know, I actually think it's not just Kendall that Roman cares about. I actually think Roman shadily has a little bit of a soft spot, because at the end of season 2, when they're on the yacht and Connor announces that he's going steady with Willa, do you remember? It's like where he is like, he's like, "I have a big announcement." He's like, "We're going steady." Roman first is like, "Okay," like eighth grader. But then he's like, "I'm happy for you, man." I think Roman has like love to give.
Yeah.
But he just,
he doesn't know how.
It's been sort of like beaten out of him. You know what's interesting? You mentioned Iverson, that the episode opened with him, with Logan reading to Iverson. the relationship between, I mean, Iverson's the only like child, only person in the next generation that's really featured in the show, even though Kendall has more than one kid. Logan has been such an asshole to Iverson throughout this show. Like, do you remember he hit him during the Went to Market yeah. game? And he then makes him taste like the poisoned, the yeah. baby poisoned food. It's like his abuse of Kendall's son, I feel like that has to come back somewhere because it has been a theme throughout the show.
Possibly. Yeah. The whole scene was very funny. Like, he's like reading him this, like, Iverson just like looks like an older person. Like, he doesn't look like a child who needs to be read to. And yeah. and then he goes, this is a little young for you. He goes, and then the sister goes, he likes it sometimes. And he goes, I sometimes like it. And then he goes, and then he calls for Carrie. Can you get in a book with a little some more action? Carrie's like, sure. But I think we're going to get to like the sibling dynamics for when we talk about the scene with them three, like in that back alley where they like kind of let it all out. And because that was like a very poignant scene. But yeah, we have to talk about Hans Christian Andersen.
Around the office, we have so many colorful framed art prints and photos. It creates such a fun atmosphere and it gives our space that unique Betches character. I wanted to frame some stuff at home too, but custom framing can be so difficult and so expensive. So the things I want to display end up collecting dust in a closet. But FrameBridge makes it easy and affordable to get your special artwork and memories in frames so you can spice up your space with ease. I love FrameBridge. I framed my ketubah for my wedding. The process was unbelievably easy. They send you a canister to send in your artwork. They send you a few different options of ways that they can frame it. You get to pick. They're actually helping me also design the frame that works best with the picture and best for my home. And getting custom frames can be difficult. FrameBridge is easy and affordable to custom frame just about anything. You can easily order online at framebridge.com or visit a retail store if you need some guidance. You can also upload a digital photo for them to print or mail your item in using their free, secure, prepaid packaging. Then FrameBridge custom frames your piece in the studio using the highest quality materials and ships it to your door in days for free. See why FrameBridge has been trusted to frame over 2 million pieces. Visit framebridge.com or a local FrameBridge store to get started and custom frame just about anything. That's framebridge.com. For years, I've been using men's razors because the quality of razors for women is seriously questionable, but disposable men's razors feel like settling. I finally tried the Athena Club razor I've been seeing online, and it was truly the easiest, smoothest shave ever. My old razors, honestly, they would rust up so quickly, and the shave I would get was so dull. My legs would get super dry. It would just be like an uncomfortable razor experience. But this razor is truly worth the hype. If you haven't tried it, you really need to give it a shot. Step up your shaving game now with Athena Club's award-winning razor kit. It's seriously the best on the market, and here's why. First of all, the Athena Club razor kit is an absolute steal at just $10. But don't let the price fool you. This razor packs a serious punch. It comes with a beautifully made ergonomic handle and two super sharp razor heads that deliver an incredibly smooth shave every time. You also get a game-changing magnetic hook in the razor kit for easy storage. This means no sitting your razor on the edge of your tub, no more goopy blades, no more razor falling down your shower floor in the middle of the night. Athena Club's razor glides effortlessly thanks to those 5 precision-engineered blades. The blades are perfectly spaced out to let your hair pass through with each stroke, and you'll experience less irritation, which is always a win in my book. Are you ready to upgrade your shaving experience? Switch to the best razor on the market and show your skin you care with Athena Club. Head over to athenaclub.com to try their award-winning razor and body products and get 20% off your purchase with code BETCHES at checkout. You can also find Athena Club razors at your local Target store. Trust me, you won't look back. Happy shaving.
So,
Mattson.
Hey, Mattson. So that scene basically leads up to Logan screaming for Jerry and like they need to go see Mattson.
Yeah. So they end up going to see Mattson at his villa in Lake Como, or at least that's where it was shot. And basically they go see him and he kind of says, like, I want to take over Waystar instead of you acquiring me. And I will make it really, really sweet for you, Logan. Like, I'll make it so fucking sweet for you, I think is what he said. So fucking nice for you.
It's so fucking nice for you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And Roman is like, he's there, you know, as sort of the number. He's now the number two. But the question of what's going to happen to the rest of the management comes up. And Logan kind of said, he doesn't say fuck off. And Mattson picks up that means like he's open to it. Mattson essentially says, like, maybe you could stay behind and we'll talk about an asset swap. Logan at that point dismisses Roman, and it becomes semi-clear that Logan is negotiating something behind Roman's back. And what he actually is negotiating, it turns out, is that he is going to get acquired by Mattson and Gojo.
Gojo.
But he needs to switch up a little bit of the shareholders' proportions in order to be able to get away with that. And conveniently, he is at his ex-wife Caroline's wedding. She's marrying a guy who seems like he would suck Logan's dick for free. And he's basically, Logan is able to reach Caroline and switch up the shares so that he can basically make this acquisition go through and the kids don't really have much say in it.
Right, which we don't know yet. But I thought, like, that scene, how you said, like, how Logan kind of dismisses Roman. The first time I saw it, like, this is what I mean by, like, the subtext. Like, you're supposed to figure out what's going on. Like, you read between the lines. Like, you don't actually – he goes, this is not happening. But, like, he communicates with his eyes. And then the way that they, like, the camera zooms on Mattson communicating with his eyes, being like, okay, we need to get rid of Roman. Meaning, like, this is happening. And I'm willing to entertain this conversation. But I can't – I have to put on a front that it's not happening to Roman. And it was just such a good, like, scene as a reflection of, like, the business conversation that we were having, because it's like he would never want to show his cards to his kids. He knew that he knows the kids are going to ruin it all, because as he says in the preview, you are not serious people. So it's just – it was just, like, such an amazing – conversation, I thought, because of just the way that Logan says, I'm willing to do it without actually doing it. Like, he's like, I'm excited, but that's what people say, right? I'm excited about the future, right? But that's just what people say, you know.
Oh, I love that.
It used to be the gentle giants with the milk and whatever. And it was just like such a, it just seems so realistic to me about how Logan would be feeling. And then I thought that the shot of him, Mattson has to take a call, and the shot of Logan, like, looking out into Lake Como and being, like, on his own and being, like, making this decision for this massive company in that one split moment, being like, okay, I think this is the moment that I'm going to sell this business. I think this is it.
And the I feel way it in my bones.
It looks out. And then you see him explain that later in the end, the last scene in that room, when it all comes to a head. But I loved it.
Do you ever feel bad that these people can't just, like, have a goddamn wedding without having to worry about if their company's going to get acquired during the wedding?
It's I love
very
it.
Very stressful.
Which,
like,
is
you
great
can't even enjoy your money. You can't even enjoy your billion-dollar wedding or whatever, because you're literally, like, having to keep your shareholders at bay in the middle of the reception. It just seems very stressful.
Well, this gets me excited for this next season or the last season, because we know Connor's wedding is coming up. So you know something else is going to happen at Connor's wedding.
Did you see the promo of, like, him and there's these, like, promo posters?
The promo.
Oh, me too. Okay, great. Okay. But okay, speaking of the promo, your point about how we see in the trailer that he says to his kids, like, I love you, but you're not serious people. It's almost like if that had been in the second scene of the show, you wouldn't even need a show, because that's what the whole everything has been pointing to, is that, like, they each get a kind of a chance where Logan, like, brings them in. And to be honest, they each do sort of prove themselves in very particular ways throughout the seasons. Like, Shiv convinces the whistleblower to not come through. She gets, like, the Sandy and Stewie to agree to not take over the company at the shareholder meeting. You just see that he gives them chances. They do something, but he's never happy with them. And at the end of the day, like, he was never going to let them take over, probably, because they're not serious people.
I don't think he sees them as people who had any adversity, which is what he says. It's like they can't really catch a break, because it's like they were born into the family. They were born into all this rich and this lifestyle and this wealth, and they were told that they're going to get this business. And the reason why that uses against them for why they can't take over the business is because of that, is because they haven't faced any adversity in life and they feel entitled to it. And so therefore he doesn't think that they can run the company. And that's what it all, he explains in the last scene.
So the only adversity they ever have to face is him. And they're never going to be able to outsmart him. He has years of experience on them. And they're not a killer. You have to be a killer.
Let's go to the next scene. The next scene is that sibling lunch you talked to. I'm the eldest son. It was good. It's basically like this fake intervention that they have. Kendall says he's not, he's deflecting or whatever he says, but he's really not. And then it really turns into Connor saying, I'm the eldest son. And he finally like breaks and yells at Kendall, oh, you're hurt. I didn't see Pop for 3 years. Which, do you know why he didn't see Pop for 3 years? When was
I
that?
Don't think they ever said.
They don't. He goes, I didn't see Pop for 3 years, but your spoon wasn't shiny enough, which I fucking loved because like, yeah, like it's just, he's basically stopped trying to kill Pop. Like, stop trying to kill him. Let's just stop.
And is Kendall like trying to kill him? Like, I don't think he's really trying to like kill him.
No, he's trying. No, but kill him meaning like trying to get him out of the company that he's built.
History teaches us not to kill one's father.
And so it was just, I thought that was like a funny scene, not my favorite scene of the episode, but it's still a good one because we rarely see them all four together talking in that way.
I mean, Connor, what is he really complaining about? In season two, and he goes to Logan and asks for $100 million as just like to shore up his liquidity.
I love Connor too.
Right? He's just so help me out with $100 million. Like what?
And I also know that Connor is going to be even more interesting and ridiculous in this last season because he's running. Like the election is important as a plot line for this season and ATN and all of that. And
because Roman wants Mencken.
Right. And it's going to be good. And Connor, like, with the preview where Connor's like, I don't want to get squeezed from the 1%. And Greg is like, less than 1 because 1 is the lowest number.
Yeah. Do you feel like Willa is starting to like Connor?
Well, so right after that scene, Connor kind of gets more vulnerable with her and he goes, my family hates me, all this stuff. And then Willa kind of feels bad and goes, fuck it. How bad can it be? Why not? We'll have fun. And then says, fuck it forever, which I thought was an amazing proposal acceptance.
I mean, it has to be like that.
I think she's starting to warm up to him. I mean, really though, like,
she tolerates it.
She tolerates, like, okay, she's got a good lifestyle here. Like,
yeah, I mean, Willa's kind of a hero because there was also
a
point
at which, a nice man.
I believe he's like, I believe he's the least mean of the siblings. I'll say that. Yeah. Definitely. But even like Willa, yeah, I mean, I think Willa's kind of in like the best position of all of them because she doesn't really have to like do anything other than like be Connor's companion, which clearly she doesn't mind that much. And there was even an episode, remember when they go to the Pierces at Turnhaven? And this is why I'm like, why do I even like Tom? He used to be such a dick. He was so like rude to Willa. He says something about her like being an escort. And she's like, well, at least I'm only getting fucked by one member of this family.
Yeah, right.
And I'm like, she's underrated. So maybe she's not the best playwright, but
Willa. Yeah.
We rate you.
That's the thing also, I think that Willa tried her, like she, in the last season, she tried to like see what else she can do as her, you know, career. She always wanted to be a playwright. She was funded beyond funded and still it wasn't good. So she's like, all right, well, fuck it forever. Like, I'm going to just see how bad can it be is really the funniest way to accept a proposal. And Connor's like, really?
But also,
I loved it.
Another funny Connor thing from that episode was when he's telling the siblings that he found like maca root in one of Logan's smoothie supplements. So he's like, that must mean he's trying to strengthen his sperm so he can have more kids. So then the three other kids are like, shit, like that would eat into our inheritance. And they're like, he's fucking Kerry to have another kid. So I think that also just, that was so emblematic of the way news spreads in this family and how they like, everything is sort of about the shares of the company. And it's just really, it's fascinating the way they all sort of play into that dynamic. And Connor draws this assumption based on this one supplement.
Yeah. The smoothies.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is, yeah, he basically says maca root for his jism. And then he goes, look at all the walnuts he's been munching. And then, what's his name? Roman goes, we need to kill this baby. And then I thought this was a great line. Shiv goes, finally, you found a worthy adversary.
The two of them have the, see, I miss that. Such good like, banter. That's so fucking funny.
Oh, it's such good banter. But okay, so that's the next like series of scenes is the wedding, like the pre-wedding and the wedding. And so we see that, okay, like Carl shows up, everybody shows up. They ask how the Wi-Fi is. And Carrie, which we need to talk about Carrie, because she's casually like not just his assistant. She's obviously hooking up with Logan. But she is like stands up against the kids. And she has like a lot of quippy lines.
Maybe she's pregnant. Like,
and she could be pregnant. And she's also like they go, how's the Wi-Fi? She goes, I sacrificed a few goats. So it seems to be working. She's a very like smart, funny character.
Perhaps Logan's fourth wife.
Perhaps Logan's fourth wife. And okay, I need to call out one of my favorite lines that happened in this pre-wedding / wedding scene, which was between Tom and Greg. And the whole episode, Greg is just concerned between dating the Contessa and Comfrey, like juggling now these two women. His stock price has gone up. And so this conversation goes as follows. Greg basically goes up to Tom. He's like, I need to talk about the princess. Tom goes, she's a princess now. I thought she was a Contessa. And Greg goes, yeah, well, I guess through her dad, she's like eighth in line for the throne of Luxembourg. And Tom goes, eighth in line? Greg, you marry her. You're a plane crash away from becoming Europe's weirdest king. And then like a few lines later, Tom goes, get in there, Greg. If Roman marries her, he'll invade France. That was just the funniest to me. Like I re-listened to that a few times and I was just like, this is fucking why I love this show. It's just like endearing banter where they like love each, these two clearly love each other and they're making fun of each other, which is my favorite form of showing love. And I thought it was so great.
It really amazes me how they're able to fit so much plot and sort of irrelevant banter in as well.
Uh-huh.
It's really a skill.
Listen, we all know that scratchy PJs can make a cranky kid. I want my kids to be comfy when they sleep and are rested in the morning, and that's why I snuggle them up in Little Sleepies. Little Sleepies makes award-winning bamboo PJs that moms rave about. I am said mom. I am obsessed with Little Sleepies. They are so, so, so soft. I just got one that was the Checkmates Zippy for my son Lucas. It's so adorable. And it's limited edition, so everybody go check it out. Little Sleepies Zip Romper Pajamas, aka Zippies, the ones that I got, were designed with thoughtful details like fold-over feet, mittens, and a double zipper to make the middle of the night diaper changes easier. Made from the buttery soft, custom-milled Luna Luxe bamboo viscose, their zip footy pajamas are gentle on sensitive skin and babies with eczema. But what parents rave about the most? How long they fit. And Little Sleepies makes the best baby shower gift. They have inclusive sizing from preemie to adults 3X. There are also nursing and pregnancy-friendly styles available for adults. So try a pair of Little Sleepies today. Fair warning, you'll never go back. You can try Little Sleepies for yourself by visiting littlesleepies.com. Plus, get 15% off your order on littlesleepies.com with code BETCHES. That's littlesleepies.com with promo code BETCHES.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It can be easy to ignore our social battery and spread ourselves thin, especially with social gatherings picking up after the winter. What's the right amount of socializing for you? And how do you recharge? Maybe you thrive around people, or maybe you just need some more alone time. Therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery. I've been in therapy for years, and nothing has transformed my life quite as much as my therapy experience. And one of the things that I love about therapy is that it gives me all the tools I need to figure out how to manage my time, and also figuring out what depletes me, what gives me energy. Sometimes too much socializing depletes me, so I've learned how to manage the amount of time that I'm going out versus staying in, the amount of new people I'm meeting versus making sure I have that me time for myself, and that's definitely a skill that I've honed in therapy. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/betches today to get 10% off your first month. That's betterhelp, HELP.com/betches.
Okay, so after like this kind of pre-wedding slash wedding scene, or after the wedding, because they rush through it, Logan doesn't come, so Kendall can come, and it's all very exciting for Kendall. Just wants to be there for mom. And Shiv makes the most, the worst speech ever. She's exactly like her mother. And then they basically kind of put two and two together. They kind of figure it out. And then Roman says, well, actually, he admits that the conversation didn't actually go. It actually went weird, and that Mattson did float the idea. And Shiv was like, you didn't fucking tell me this. You could have told me this before. And so then that's when it, like, they spring into action and they try to get Kendall. And Kendall's like all sad and depressed. He's like, no, I don't want anything to do with this. And this is when they go into the back alley to talk about it. And the siblings in the back alley, which was a very, I thought, like, emotional,
yeah, but,
like, real moment between all three of them. And this is what I thought. And I was really observing the three characters in relation to each other. And it was kind of interesting that I thought that Shiv didn't actually do or say anything to Kendall. She was just kind of like there by like touching his shoulder. But Roman was the one who, like, Kendall was having a full breakdown. He said, I killed the kid. He did the whole thing. And Roman was the one who was like, did you really? Like, if anything, you're an irresponsible.
He's like,
I'm an irresponsible. Yeah. And he's the one who talks him down. And even in that moment at the end when, like, the three of them are fake, not hugging, but like touching. Like,
in the triangle.
Shiv has like the least amount of affection and touch. She just touches Kendall on the top of his head with her fingertips, not even her full hand. But Roman has his arms, like, has his hands on his shoulders, and then later puts his arm around him. And this is what I was thinking, that, like, Roman really does have affection for his family, his siblings, and Kendall, and cares about, like, their well-being. But she is the killer.
Yeah.
Shiv is exactly like her mother, and she is the killer. She has no emotion, and which in the end bites her in the ass, because this is what leads Tom to betray her at the end. But I really loved it. What did you think about this scene?
I thought this scene was, like, okay, also very visually, like, captivating. Because when I envision the finale, this is the scene I envision, them sitting in this dirt, like, alley.
Yeah.
I think to your point about how Shiv is the killer, it's interesting because if one of the – I think maybe in a weird way, like, any moment where they show emotion, the boys, is kind of a weakness for them. Like, even in the end when Roman is like, I don't know, love – and yeah. And Logan's like, you come to me with love? Yeah. And so the emotion for them is weakness. But in Shiv's case, the lack of emotional perception and the lack of, like, care towards anybody hurts her. Because, honestly, like, maybe it's like for a woman, like, you do need to have that little bit of emotion. But for a man, to have it is the weakness. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I just think that was, like, sort of an interesting comparison, because the whole time you're thinking, like, well, who is actually the most fit to run the company?
I think Kendall.
You do?
Yeah. But so, well, with the exception of his addiction.
Why not, like,
and his,
oh,
like,
with the exception of his, why not, well, like, Roman, though?
He can't. He just
why?
Can't. Because he's too, he doesn't get it. He doesn't
understand
business.
You.
I don't know. It's not Roman. He's too much of a liability. They, all three of them, have their own way. And this is why, like,
disqualifier.
That disqualifies them for actually being. But I think Kendall, if it wasn't for, like, his kind of need to jump and just get there, like, if it wasn't for season one, if he was just like, all right, fine, Dad, like, I get it. This is your company. I can keep waiting as long as, you know, I'll keep working at it. Mm-hmm. And, like, trying to prove to you that it's me. Like, if he had been just, like, instead of trying to take it from him, because he's, like, has an addictive personality, he kind of has this, like, rush. Like, and that's what they say in the interventions, like, you crave the family drama. You crave wanting to take Dad down. Like, it's sort of like this, he can't stop. So, right. if it wasn't, if he had been just a little bit more like logical, which Logan is always, I think that Kendall understands the business and understands the way that Logan thinks the best. Shiv, though, I think is the least. Shiv, I think, is the least. I mean, besides Connor. I agree. Shiv is the least. Roman but, next. And then I think Kendall next up. But still none can really do it.
Well, here's the thing with Kendall. That also came up in the early in season three when he's like trying to get them to turn against Logan and then he sends the donuts. If Kendall, I think that where Kendall lost them on that plan was that he was going to put himself in charge, like automatically.
Totally.
Because they were hearing him until he was like, and I would be in charge and you guys would just be like around. They're like, well, fuck that. Why would I do this so that you could be in charge? And yeah, I think you're right. Like his hunger for power or his hunger for position is a big downfall for
him. Yeah.
But I don't know. What Logan says about Roman, I think, is right. And I think it says something that like Jerry also believes in Roman.
Yeah.
Roman could act a little bit less like
they
being.
If they all could act a little bit less like themselves, they all would be good for. But the reason why they are themselves is because they grew up with like such like privilege and wealth. And like, so it just and is because the Logan, way it is.
And because they keep reinforcing their own dynamic. Like and, yeah, being their around family. Their family just makes them be more like themselves.
Makes it
they
worse.
Can't get out of it. You know, it's interesting. I feel like we are like that in our own business. Like we have our dynamic and it's, I mean, seriously, like it is like a family business. And, you know, obviously like, it, you know, it's a good thing, but you, and we don't argue like they do and try to like unseat each other. And we're like also not a public company and there's no other weird people involved. But the point is like, it's a little less toxic, but the point is like you occupy a place in the dynamic and your strengths and weaknesses tend to solidify rather than evolve because you're in that dynamic you've always been in being reinforced back and forth
for the most
again
part.
And again. But I mean, yeah.
This scene, I thought this scene was great because there's a lot of great lines in the way that like, and they all are just themselves and just Roman saying, lighten up, glum, glum. And Kendall's like, I killed a kid. And he's like, who hasn't clipped a kid with an odd kid with their Porsche? And it was all just.
He's like, you killed a kid once, Shiv. And she's like, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then she goes, and then he takes it really far. And he's like, who's the real victim here? I waited three quarters of an hour for a gin and tonic.
Yeah. They were down a waiter. I mean, we have a whole, here's the thing, audience. We have a whole quote section, but we're just giving away the farm right now.
We're just going to give them all. But so then this leads them off to
rush in on Logan
because Laird calls Shiv and is like he was squeezed out and Laird is bitter and he calls Shiv and they get confirmation that Logan is trying to sell. And so this springs them into action. They get into the van and they all kind of are in the same playing field. And I thought like also Kendall probably feels a sense of huge relief and release that he got this big secret out there that his dad has been holding on to him as just this has been his like leverage or over him. It's just been holding it against him. And everyone's like, it's not that bad. You didn't kill him. He killed him. The road killed him.
Right. I think it's a little weird that Kenzel didn't like come to that conclusion himself. But I don't know. It's very Gossip Girl. Where Serena Vanderwinden's like, I killed a man.
He was fucked up too.
I killed him.
And his dad enforced it even further. Like, you know, it made him go there. Remember, it was all very, he like kept him down. And so it was like another moment where Kendall got out from under his dad's like foot. And it was like, oh, actually, maybe it can be okay. Like, there is a light. Like, my siblings will still love me and accept me no matter what. So
like
he's
Naomi
like
Pierce
down,
said, he likes him in his weakened state.
Exactly. And so he feels like, okay, maybe I can help my siblings now. I'm not trying to win here, but I can help them. And so he realizes that, you know, they need their vote for a supermajority in the car. And that's when they hack their plan. And Shiv goes around asking people, how do we feel about killing dad?
Right. She calls Tom And she tells him that they're going to do this. And then that leads to the biggest twist of them all, which
we didn't know was going to happen. Like when you said that, when you said that Tom goes and tells Greg, watching it for the first time, I remember not understanding. You think that Tom is saying like, are you ready to get on with this Shiv train? Like we're going to be with the siblings.
Yes.
You don't know that it happens until when Shiv realizes it happens. And that was like such a fucking amazing twist and moment.
Ugh. Yeah. Well, also, so let's talk about a little detail in that scene when Tom kind of flips on them.
Yeah.
So they're on their way back they're in this car on the way to go see Logan in his meeting. When Logan's sort of in this like back room with like a control room of the company that he's created. And he's on the phone with Caroline, their mother. And it's clear that they had opened up their estate and he had redistributed shares to Caroline.
The divorce agreement, yeah.
The divorce agreement, right. So their whole supermajority plan wasn't going to work. But then it becomes clear that the reason that Logan found out he needed to do this was because Tom told him after Shiv had called and that what he had been saying to Greg was not, do you want to get Logan? It's, do you want to screw the siblings and be in Logan's good favor? And I think this was so, so, so fascinating because they were on the phone with their lawyer, Rex Hendon, who is the lawyer who Logan gave to Tom to call when he was supposed to like take the fall for everyone earlier in the season with the DOJ. Once they were like safe with the DOJ, the first thing Logan says to Tom right after they find out they're sort of in the clear was, I will remember. Mm-hmm. So I have a feeling that Tom sort of used this. And then I think when Kendall in mid-season tried to meet with Tom in the diner to get him to turn before he knew he was going to get out of it, I think that his decision point there where he realized like everyone gets fucked except Logan was what made him sort of think, you know, Shiv doesn't give a shit about me. Logan never gets fucked. I might as well look out for myself here.
That, I totally agree with that. That, and in that phone call, during that phone call, Shiv basically is not even talking to Tom. She's just bragging.
Well, she says, we're going to get him with the supermajority. He goes, well, what's going to happen to me? And she's like, yeah, you'll be fine.
What's my place in this, right? And he's like, yeah, something high. And he's like, I see. And then she talks about like, well, ATN is going to like make the announcement that Logan's gone soft or something like that. And in that moment, I remembered that Tom never wanted to work for Shiv. Remember when she was like had that stint at the office where she was like doing stuff?
Yeah.
And like no one believed it. Everybody, even like Connor didn't. But anyway, he never really wanted to work for her. So, and in that moment, she was like ordering him basically like what ATN's going to do. And she's like, fuck this.
Yeah.
And he's like, I am not going down. And I totally agree with you. He's always just, you have to stay on Logan's good side. And he is smart. Like Tom is smart. Even in the first opening scene, he's like, he has to have like a Forbes interview. And Shiv like completely makes fun of him and saying, oh, you need to turn on the bigot spigot. He's like, well, that's actually pretty reductive. Actually, you can talk about all the things I have done for ATN. And in that, also in that conversation with Greg, like Greg obviously is going to go with him because he remembers that Tom was going to go to jail for him.
Mm-hmm.
And Tom is going to go to jail for Logan.
Also, no one's looking out for Greg except Tom and maybe Ewan, who he screwed over.
And no one's looking out for Tom.
Right. No one's looking out for Tom.
No one is looking out for Tom. So Tom has to look out for Tom. His wife is not looking out for him, clearly.
And Tom probably understands, like, if you think about, you know, episode one or season one, Logan says to Shiv, like, you're marrying a man far below your station. And over time, I actually think Tom, like, proves himself to Logan. He makes himself into less of a joke. And it's because it's clear that Logan rewards loyalty and Tom is loyal at every step of the way. Tom is kind of like a little old school.
And he respects the fact that also like what he has in common with Logan is that they also, nobody's looking out for them. Mm-hmm. Like both of them, nobody looked out for Logan. He yeah. built this out of nothing. Nobody looks out for, like, that's real adversity to a degree. But you could tell that, like, Tom is, has been working his way up season after season after season. And the other thing, part of that, that I saw on the HBO posted is two scenes. The one that you married a man fathoms beneath you.
Yeah.
And he also says, because he's never going to betray you. And then
yeah.
the next scene that they show on the HBO Insta was him betraying her.
But here's the thing, Tom, I don't think he would have betrayed her if she had ever once not betrayed him. She betrays him time after time within the show, within their relationship with him in business.
She's awful.
She is so awful to him. And I don't think he would have betrayed her if she had like once been loyal to him in even the smallest way. But she's shown him over and over that she's actually going
to – she's like, mean
she was
him.
Fine with him going to jail. And she wasn't even like consoling when he was like upset that he was going to go to jail for her father.
She thought it was a good idea.
Right. At the lunch, she was like, Tom should get in trouble.
It was – yeah, it was – she deserves every second of that betrayal.
Yeah. So that last scene, that last shot of the episode where Tom is trying to console Shiv, but she can tell that she puts it together that he had betrayed her because in that second, because she sees about a second earlier when Logan walks out of the room, he gives Tom like a pat on the back. She puts it together.
Why is he even there? Yeah.
Right. She puts it together that he had, when she called Tom, he actually ran to Logan, which precipitated this whole thing with the supermajority and the shares and Caroline and the super, you need the supermajority. You need the supermajority.
Have you ever felt that fast fashion ick but can't always afford the super high-end stuff? I have a solution for you. Nuuly. Nuuly has everything you need to bring your closet up to speed for the season without breaking the bank. Free your closet of impulse purchases and skip the buyer's remorse by renting instead. Nuuly is a subscription clothing rental service. For just $98 a month, you get your choice of any six styles each month. You choose whatever you want to rent for whatever you have going on. It's totally up to you. Access to thousands of styles from more than 400 brands. There's no fees, late fees, damage fees, or fees to pause or cancel. So it's no big deal if you lose a button, spill something, or you just need to take a break. They have inclusive sizing up to 5X, as well as petite and maternity. Nuuly is a great value at $98 a month for any six styles, but right now you can get $20 off your first month of Nuuly when you sign up with the code BETCHES20. Just go to NUULY.com, that's Nuuly with two U's, and enter the code BETCHES20 and sign up to get $20 off your first month. That's NUULY.com, Nuuly with two U's, and use code BETCHES20. Nuuly subscription clothing rental. Change your clothes.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Okay, that would be a good time to move on to our next segment, which is we're calling HR Nightmare. And that is where we pick our favorite quotes from the show.
Nice memes, good memeage, and so on.
There were a ton of incredible lines in the last episode. Aileen, what was your favorite line in the finale? I mean, I know we've kind of...
I told you what like I thought was like the funniest, my favorite little like moment of dialogue with like the... Like you're a plane crash away from being Europe's weirdest king.
Yeah.
but I thought, and you know, earlier in this episode of ours that I was like trying to figure out what my favorite scene was, but my favorite scene just that I felt like just tingles was the last scene when Logan just basically tells them like all the reasons why they're idiots. And so maybe I don't know if this is my favorite quote, but when he says, make your own fucking pile, like that to me was, maybe it's not like the funniest quote, but it was just like the whole point and the essence of everything. Like there's also
well,
a lot
the
of
setup. The setup to that I think was really good because the kids are trying to say to Logan, like, what does the money even matter to you?
This is what he says. Logan says, this is the best moment to sell. If I don't do the best deal at any given point, what's the point of anything? And then he basically says that he's leaving $5 bill on the table. And Kendall goes, what are you going to do with another $5 bill? Put it on your other pile of like
bills.
And then they ask, like, what about them? And he goes, make your own fucking pile. And so I loved that. Because it was just like the whole point of everything. Like you don't even understand. And then he also follows up with he's doing it to get himself and you assurances for the future. Because if you pull their own like desire for like their inheritance, for like they're taking over this business, if you take it out and you look logically like Logan is, he knows that they're going to run the business to the ground and that their business is going to be worth nothing if they are running it. So what's the point of anything if you're not making the best deal at any moment? So he's deciding, he feels it in his bones. That was also my favorite line. I feel it in my bones. I say it in my head all the time. And it was just, this is the moment. Like, and that's the moment that he looked out into Lake Como. He's like, this is the moment. And I was just like, yeah, Logan's been right this whole time. He's doing everything for the business. And the business is also the future of the family.
Right. I mean, it's also emblematic of the fact that, like, at any point they could have just decided they don't want to be the successor and take some of their inheritance and start their own business. And that's also part of his point is, like, make your own fucking pile. But he probably has this blind spot that he doesn't even realize that he kind of forces them to stay in.
All right, Sammy, what was your favorite quote? Or moment.
Souls are boring. Boo souls. That was just the best part. Good. That was the best part when Tom asks Greg, are you ready to sell your soul? And he's like, what am I going to do with this soul anyway?
Yeah.
That was my favorite scene and my favorite line for sure.
What I also thought like during that scene was that they like the dynamics were really good in that like Greg's ego was just soaring in this episode, and he even said things like even right before that it was so out of Greg's character. Like
he was comparing the Contessa to Comfrey. And then another really funny line while we're doing funny lines was Tom being like the man who was dying of thirst is suddenly a mineral water critic.
I didn't catch that.
He was saying that in reference to the fact that Greg was jumping from Comfrey to the Contessa really just very quickly.
Yeah, it was really good. But then Tom like puts him in his place and he's like, you fucked up the congressional hearing. Oh, I don't know. and like it was just like Tom. And then Greg's like, yeah, I guess. And he's like, what's in it for me, basically? You know, he goes, I have Bright Star Buffalo in my right pocket. I'm kind of a big deal. And then Tom says a great line. He says, you could be heading away from the endless middle and coming to the bottom of the top. And he goes, bottom of the top. And he goes, could I get my own Greg? He goes, you could have 20. It was such a good like rapport. And then he does, and it like sets him up for the Boo Souls line. But for us as watchers for that first scene, you think that he's gonna go with Shiv. But
yeah,
he's really just thinking and he's going
so
with
good.
Logan. It was so
And to
good.
Think that just like a year ago, Greg was vomiting out of the costume of a theme park mascot.
Exactly. Like Greg has no like qualms with like, you know, negotiating his way to the top or just like not sleeping his way to the top, but making deals.
No, or the bottom of the top. Could I even get my own Greg?
You could have 20.
It was great. So
and then he goes,
funny.
He's a Greg Weiler, Tom's attack dog. It was great. But
we could just perform the scenes ourselves on.
Yeah,
the,
I think
the
I would
like,
love to just redo this.
It's like, how do they do every fucking line? Is a zing.
It's just so good. It's so good. But okay, let's go to our next segment, which is called We Rate You. He rates you. It's each week we're going to nominate characters and scenes of three different categories. And so we're going to like basically choose the same categories. We're going to choose characters for the same three categories every episode.
It's like an award, a mini award show.
Superlatives.
Okay, so I'll introduce the categories. Our first category is my number one boy, and that is who we have crowned the winner of the week, the best person in the episode. Our second category is called Out of the Will. They're the loser of the episode. Makes a lot of sense. And then we have the boar on the floor, and that is the winner of the most uncomfortable or cringe-inducing moment. So it could be a person who did the thing or a scene that was just very uncomfortable. Okay, so who's your number one boy?
My number one boy.
Okay, my number one boy in this episode is Logan. Like, I want to say Tom, but it really is Logan. Like, he has you beat. He beat everybody. He, even though he was like, it wasn't his wedding, he was the star of the episode. He was in every important scene, like with the Mattson conversation and all of that. And in the end, when he goes, "You're toy soldiers." And it's just, he's my number one.
Yeah, the toy soldiers. You're playing little toy soldiers.
You're playing toy soldiers.
My number one boy is Hans Christian Anderfuck, because he's the one who just acquired a huge company and is now going to dominate media. I mean, if you think about it, like, he navigated that conversation with so much savvy. That's the way he navigated their dynamics. Because if you think about it, like, it wasn't the first scene of this type where you had Roman going with one of his sons to go see like an investor. And what happens in each of those scenes is that the outside investor, in the other scene, it was Josh with Kendall, they're able to sort of like basically act as like a wrench between the father and the son, because that tie is already so unstable. And they end up being the ones who like win out in those situations. So I think the winner is Hans Christian Anderfuck.
You know what's also interesting? In that birthday episode, Kendall's birthday episode, he pitches to
Mattson.
I want to call him Eric because he's from True Blood.
Yeah.
He pitches to Mattson that he should buy, Gojo should buy them. And like, he pitches that a long time ago. That's why I like think that Kendall understands but he just doesn't know how to do it, really. But yeah, I see what you're saying. Mattson did win out, and he had such a great – also his quote about Zuckerberg. You know Zuckerberg. And they're like, yeah.
When you think about all the three kids in – they each have a quality that if you put them together and like they worked in concert, they could actually be really good at the business, because, for example, Kendall's forward thinking and he realizes that Gojo should acquire them. Roman is actually good at kind of like navigating those conversations and making them happen. And Shiv understands the political landscape and how to not totally get like fucked by the DOJ. Yeah. So when you think about it, like, they actually all could run it together if they would like work as a team, but they don't.
Which is what they said in the car. Yeah. Like, remember when Roman was like, not to be all, ew, disgusting, that we could actually be a good team. All right. Who is out of the will for you, Sammy?
Fuck off.
Shiv is out of the will for me because she couldn't even keep her own husband on lock. Like, you're literally such an asshole to your own husband that you push him away, that he screws you for the particular reason that he even married her in the first place.
You know? I guess. Yeah, who's the biggest loser of this episode? Yeah, Shiv got fucked.
It's not even that she got fucked. Like, she fucked up. If she had had any respect for Tom at any point, he would never have done this to her.
Yeah.
He did this as a last straw. Like, she pushed him into this.
I think also that my out of the will and boar on the floor is connected.
Bullshit. Boar on the floor.
Because the most humiliated person or the most like uncomfortable, cringy moment was Shiv. Like, her extreme confidence in all of this made me so uncomfy. Like, in the car when she's like, "We're just gonna do it. He's out," and talking about the ACN headlines. And like, and then when they were confronting Logan, she was like the one when she was like, oh, but you need a supermajority. He's like, you need a supermajority. Yeah. And like, and Kendall was actually kind of silent during that. But Shiv like overplays her hand a lot. And like, because her personality is so entitled. And it just, to me, both of those things came hand in hand. Like, she was so uncomfortable. And then you see it when she sees Tom. But then also at the end, like, she cries for herself. She doesn't cry for anything, anybody else. She just cries for herself. But a lot of people speculated that she's pregnant, actually, this whole time. Do you remember that theory?
Yeah. Yeah. Why were people speculating that?
Let's get into that in the theory. Let's get into the theories.
Okay. I agree with your bore on the floor. Honestly, like, that's the supermajority was my bore on the floor. Because that was the funniest part.
That was the most humiliating part. Yeah.
I mean, I'm trying to think if there were other moments. Like, I think it was sort of, I think maybe like Peter Munyon's whole existence is pretty interesting, because when you think about how he's just this guy, if you remember, Roman found out that their mother was marrying this guy. They thought she was still dating that guy, Rory. So this man, Peter Munyon, like, his existence in this whole thing is weirdly pivotal, because he's obsessed with Logan and getting closer to Logan. Meaning,
he's the,
like,
one at the end. He got. I'm not saying he's.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, I'm just saying he's another sort of. I'm saying he's like cringe. You know what I mean? Like, his desperation is cringe. All right, we are at our last segment. It is called The Forecast. We're going to be making predictions every episode. This one will be a little shorter because it's the, you know, we're just doing the finale. But Aileen, what were you going to say about the Shiv questionable pregnancy?
So a lot of people speculated that Shiv is pregnant because she, in a previous episode, but still in Italy, she like said no to champagne very casually when the waiter came over. And then in that very last scene, when like Tom puts his arms on her, when she has her hand on her like uterus, like her lower abdomen. And those are all like kind of signs, but I don't think that she's, and then she's also weird when Tom goes like, we're thinking about freezing. And she's like, like I don't think that she's pregnant, but I could also see it.
Okay.
Because that's why she feels even more fucked betrayed. More betrayed.
Well, she could be pregnant and he doesn't know.
That's what I mean. He doesn't know. He doesn't know.
Yeah. Okay. I think that's very interesting. I want to make a prediction that somebody is pregnant. Maybe it's Carrie. Maybe it's Shiv.
I'm so interested to watch Carrie's whole arc, like, just to see what happens with Carrie. She's interesting. She's there. She was there going to the Mattson meeting. She's just always there. She's working things out. This whole season's going to be – obviously, it's the last season, so it's going to be fucking crazy. And the fact that they felt like they needed to end it now is meaningful and telling. Like, this is, like, where we have to close it off. We don't want this to drag on.
So, well, apparently the showrunner wasn't entirely sure that he wanted to end it here, and he didn't tell the cast that it was definitely the end until – it was the end, until the end. So they didn't like act this season necessarily assuming that it was the end. All right. We are so excited to see what happens. And that is it for this week's episode. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe. Follow the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you're listening now. Let us know in the reviews what you think of this episode. We are so excited to do these every week.
And we're going to have new episodes every single Monday for as long as the show is going on, not like forever, but as long as the show is on. So be sure to subscribe right now so you don't miss an episode. You can follow me and Aileen.
Follow me at Sammy, and until next Monday,
we hear for you.
ATM, we hear for you.
At Betches is produced by Sean Kilby, Jorge Morales-Pico, Rebecca Sosmakat, and Aliza Zim. Editing by Basilio Perez. Be sure to follow at Betches on Instagram and send us your emails to podcast@betches.com.
Betches.